Welcome to the College Knowledge Podcast, sponsored by the College Planning Network and Paradigm Financial Group. Whether you're searching for that right fit college, applying to college, or figuring out how you're going to afford it all, you're in the right place. You'll hear from deans, admissions counselors, student athletes, and scholars from esteemed universities and colleges around the country. We'll dig deep to uncover their insight and unique experiences. So whether you're a student gearing up for college or a parent with college-bound kids, sit back, relax, and listen. Like you, we have lots of questions. Our guests have the answers, and we're excited to share them with you. Let's get started. We can send your student to the school of their dreams and send you to your dream retirement. Visit us at elitecollegiateplanning.com to get started. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to College Knowledge. I'm your host, Dave Kozak, alongside my esteemed colleague, Mr. Joe Kearns, and co-host.
Dave, pleasure to be here as always, sir. I came across a pretty disturbing fact. I'm curious if you knew this one. We've talked about graduation rates and different, the 4-year, 6-year. I ended up diving into it a little bit more. So
you went down the rabbit hole.
I did. I always do. So you ready for this one?
Okay.
Did you know that college freshmen that entered trying to earn a bachelor's degree in the fall of 2023, it is estimated that only 18% of them will have a degree in 4 years.
Wow. Wow.
18%.
Was there any background? Did they give you any explanation to it?
Well, I mean, what was scary was we hear, okay, oh, like graduation rate, you know, 40%, 60%. But then it got into the details of how that number is arrived at. And if you have students that transfer, they're considered first year students.
Got it.
So if you get like a second year transfer and they graduate in 4 years that technically took them 6 years, they still count as a 4-year graduate and things like that.
Got it.
And dropouts and different things. So it was pretty interesting, but it's also the 150% rule. Like if you're a student working for an associate's degree, if you finish in 4 years, you graduated on time for the 2-year degree, right? If you're working on a 6-year program, you graduate in 8 or 10 years or 9 years, you are still graduating on time. So it was really interesting that this article and all the data that it really broke down was that when you really just look at students that go in for that 4-year degree, only 18% will have it in 4 years.
That's crazy.
Yes, sir.
Well, and I think we'll circle back on that one in another episode. But I'm very pleased to welcome today our guest, Professor Michael Wagner. He is the Department Head of Digital Media at the Antoinette Westfall College of Media Arts and Design at Drexel University. Professor Wagner, welcome to the show, and thanks for agreeing to do this with us.
Well, thank you for having me, and great pleasure to be here.
So, to start, we'll start with the easy questions because we got some stuff we can get into for sure, and we're going to. But give us a little bit of a broad brushstroke of what the College of Media Arts and Design entails. What subject matters are included in that?
Well, I mean, we are a little bit unusual college because we are very interdisciplinary. So we house a lot of disciplines that are related to design. And we also have a couple of disciplines that are in the media kind of field. So we have anything from dance to theater to kind of the more traditional things like architecture, management disciplines like entertainment management. And then we also have obviously digital media. And in our department, which I'm responsible for, we are primarily dealing with game design, animation, and user experience design at the undergraduate and the graduate level.
Which is a hot topic and a lot of the pace of play in your area of expertise is crazy right now with AI and technology advancements and all that. How do you keep up with it?
That's honestly really a challenge right now. Things are moving so quickly. I don't think a lot of people realize that how fast things are moving at the moment. I was part of the group that put together the strategy document for the university in terms of how to deal with artificial intelligence. And we would come up with certain recommendations. And as soon as we had put that in paper, essentially everything had already changed. So it was a constant improvement process to get the document finished. So things really moving on a weekly basis almost. Wow. And it is difficult to kind of keep up. You do the things that everybody does, just kind of trying to be informed and following a lot of YouTube channels and those kind of things and a lot of podcasts. But right now it is a challenge. It really is.
Well, and it's crazy from the aspect of artificial intelligence, because where it started, I mean, I jumped on ChatGTP 8 months ago, 10 months ago, maybe when it first launched, and I was introduced to it and I was like, this is crazy. And that was not history. That is like recent past that I did that, and where it is today and the problems that are presenting itself. The crazy part to me about artificial intelligence is it is becoming an organic evolution in its own right. Right. By general nature of what it is learning, growing, expanding, and it's starting to present the challenges we all knew it would. So in bringing that kind of concept, how does a university manage the use of it? Right. It's you can't put genie back in the bottle. Can we agree on that? Number one, it is here and it's going to continue. And I think there's some, when you talk about game design stuff, there's some amazing stuff that it's doing in that realm, but how do you manage it at the university level? And then secondarily, if you have an opinion on how parents manage, like I know every time I go to my parents' house, I get a list of things technologically that I have to fix for them. Right.
Mm, yeah.
So, as parents, we've got a day job. We've got to run the kids from here to there. We got to do all that stuff. How do you keep up with that?
Well, I think this is actually one of the main reasons why I think a college education is important, because our job really is to kind of figure out what's going to happen in the next decade, right? So we are in the business of making sure that we understand how the industry is going to evolve, not next year, but 10 years down the road. So for us, this development, or at least for me, this development did not come completely unexpected. The issues that you're running into kind of when you're working at the university in particular is that you need to balance the expectations of the parents, the students, the industry, and then also kind of making sure that everybody understands, hey, but wait a moment, there's something coming that's going to be really relevant in 10 years and you need to sort of communicate that correctly. So kind of balancing that really is the main challenge. Because we already knew that these things would come eventually, we are reasonably well prepared. So we already have courses that deal with artificial intelligence, and we are restructuring our entire program to make sure that people, particular in the creative disciplines, are kind of getting an education that actually prepares them for the next 10 years. But it is sort of kind of this balancing act is really the challenge, right? So kind of how do you communicate that? How do you make sure that anybody who wants to get into a university or college education at this point understands that our job is really to kind of predict what they need in like 10, 20 years. Mm-hmm. And that might not necessarily be the way they actually see the industry right now. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of really the challenge.
Yeah. I mean, I think back to being in high school and we had a computer lab, right? Where if you didn't, there were no computers on the desk. There were no, you had one computer class where you went in and you learned how to type, and then you learned spreadsheets and you learned how to produce. And now you've got computers in every single classroom, not in the classroom. The students have them, right? I've got second graders with iPads that are coming home from school. I've got kids with Chromebooks and all that. So how do you balance the quasi classical education of preparing the mind to think and grow and do all that with the tools so expansive? That's got to be an educator struggle right there. To the academic world at the university level, right? I've always looked at it as the job of the educator is to prepare the person that when they graduate, they know how to learn, they know how to grow, they know how to, you know, process data, process inputs, create outputs, and really it's sort of the start of the next journey. Is it going to get to a point where we have to, like, I can't even think about the human interaction? Like, how do you keep the human involved in the whole thing?
Well, all very difficult questions. I mean, we are fortunately in a position that makes it a little bit easier for us, because we are, and I'm not completely sure if that's something that you guys are aware of, but we have a very intense co-op program. So essentially our students are required to go on internships for three executive for 3 years, mm-hmm. and kind of half a year every year. And that essentially means that we need to be very, very closely connected to what the industry is doing. And we need to be very, very closely connected to how things are developing in the industry. So we cannot sit back and kind of mm-hmm. do things the way we've always done them. We actually need to constantly move, and we need to anticipate those moves. So that makes it a little bit easier to us. It's quite interesting that you brought up these computer classrooms, because they are, over the last couple of years, maybe even a decade or so, there was a kind of a transition back to a non-computer classroom, because, as you said, for most of the classes, not all of them, but for most of the classes, the laptops and MacBooks that students have today are perfectly fine. So we are moving back to a bring your own computer kind of environment. And that really focuses on the social interaction. And with this artificial intelligence in particular, I think one of the things that people don't realize is that what artificial intelligence is really good at, it takes out that production kind of the pure production kind of efforts, really. And it focuses on what humans bring to the table. And what humans bring to the table is usually the interaction between humans and the creativity and kind of preparing everything. And then in the end, kind of making everything or kind of optimizing everything to the point that is, that it becomes consumable by a human, or that actually kind of looks good and everything. And that essentially means that artificial intelligence is actually helping us in kind of getting back that human element, because that really is the one thing. That is the one thing where we differ from artificial intelligence, being able to work in groups and kind of to discuss things and to critique things and to sit together and figure out what is good and what is not good and how to improve things. That is something where humans are really, really good at, and going to stay on top of artificial intelligence, at least for the foreseeable future. And that essentially means, to some extent, and that might surprise a lot of people, artificial intelligence is actually kind of helping us in bringing this human element back into the classroom at the college level.
Mm. Interesting. Great perspective. I listened to a post you put on YouTube, and it was talking about the creative process and how artificial intelligence it can really help that. I want a two-part question. About 2 weeks ago, I saw an article from, and I think it was the University of Arizona. And maybe it was, I think it was the University of Arizona, basically said, we're artificial intelligence open. So we endorse the use of it. We're telling you to use it. With that, like, to me, that just hit a wall where I was like, well, how do you know if you're getting the students' work or you're getting the artificial intelligent work? And like, how do you turn to grading things? And how do you, it short circuited my brain. So how do you guys deal with that aspect if you're endorsing the use of the artificial intelligence?
That is an excellent question. I do believe that there's just no other way than to do it that way. Essentially, mm-hmm. you need to be open to this technology, and you need to be able to allow students to use that, because they will use it anyway. And with the way artificial intelligence is going to evolve, it's actually going to optimize the output in such a way that you cannot detect it. Because of the way essentially artificial intelligence works, you can sort of create models that essentially optimize the output in such a way that, kind of detection tools no longer detect artificial intelligence as artificial intelligence generated. So for us, it becomes impossible to identify whether something was created by artificial intelligence or a human. And that essentially has two consequences. The first consequence is, actually has a couple of consequences, but the first consequence is that you cannot not allow it because you are not really able to kind of detect.
You can't govern it, right?
Second, right. So the second consequence is that the human interaction between the student and the teacher becomes more important. Mm-hmm. Because now essentially what they turn in, they can turn in anything really, but, it becomes very, very clear if the student has understood what he or she was doing. If you as a teacher talk to them and you kind of critique things and you discuss that and bring that into the classroom. So this human interaction, that was what I was saying before, becomes more and more important because that sort of makes sure that the knowledge or the skill is actually reaching the student and kind of the student actually kind of did that. The final thing is that obviously because this has such a huge impact, we need to and this is something that we have started doing last year, really. We need to completely redesign everything. And by everything, I mean really everything. From the structure of the programs to the structure of the assignments, to the structure of the classes, everything needs to be designed in such a way that it takes into consideration that artificial intelligence is used. One final thing that I kind of should also point out at that point is that universities also need to develop rules, right? So you have rules, right? So students are open to use artificial intelligence, but they have to disclose that, right? Mm-hmm. But once again, that rule by itself doesn't really help you in really governing everything because you, in the end, you can't really govern that.
Yeah.
Now, what a lot of people don't really understand is that the way students are using artificial intelligence is extremely creative. And they are finding new ways to use it on a daily basis. I recently talked to one of my PhD students and she essentially used ChatGPT in order to plan her PhD work. So what she would essentially do is she would go into ChatGPT and would ask ChatGPT, I am researching the following research question. I have the following background. And then she explained what her skills are. And then she asked ChatGPT, give me a timeline and a plan on how to complete that PhD work. Mm-hmm. And ChatGPT came back with a really good timeline that kind of explained exactly what's supposed to be done, when it's supposed to be done, how this works. So kind of these tools are something that are really more of your personal assistants. This is going to become more and more important. We sometimes kind of get lost in the reproduction of artwork, but the fact that these tools are really assisting in managing how you go through a college, that is something that I think is extremely exciting, and a lot of people don't really realize that's primarily how our students use it today.
I love that use, and
it scares the living daylights out of me.
You don't like that one?
Like, well, yeah, but the machine just managed the person, right?
Well, it made suggestions.
Not necessarily.
Come on.
Yeah.
My biggest fear, and it's funny because as technology advances, I think my biggest fear, and I'm going to use my car, and growing up, and I was always very proud of how well I could parallel park. And for the past, I don't know how many years, I have now had a car with a rear view camera that obviously when I started driving, it did not exist. Last summer, I had to move my parents' van that was older and didn't have a camera, and I couldn't do it. Like, I struggled. I thought I might have been like an inch away from the car and I was 3 feet from the back. And I just bring that up that my concern is that there becomes such a reliance on technology that we essentially lose potential skills. And I'm not saying that everyone has to be a parallel parker, like an expert, but that was something that, again, I joke about it. I say I used to be proud of that. You know, like, oh, I can fit in there, you know. And now if I didn't have the backup camera, there's no way I could do that. Right. I lost my skill to be able to do that. That's part of my concern with if we so heavily rely on it, we may lose the day-to-day skills or things that could make us more productive or more creative in the future. That's something that I'm a little worried about.
But I think to Professor Wagner's point, it's like, yeah, well, those skills became obsolete. Because,
I guess, yeah.
Right. I mean, and the skills that you're sort of embracing are the ones that are the next decade, not the previous decade. Right. And I agree. Like, there's executive functioning things that I think are it's interesting when you start talking about, now this is a PhD level student who goes in and says, tell me how to get here, right? I'm at point A. I want to get to point B and I want to do it the most efficient means possible. Please lay that out for me. It goes back and does it. But when you talk about at the younger ages, right, there's executive functioning that we start taking, like taking responsibility for your stuff, remembering things, doing things that you're supposed to do. And that's where I sort of am like, wow. And listen, I use Siri, right? Hey, Siri, set a reminder and let me know I got to do this or set a, you know, so, and I use technology, sure, and embrace it. But there's something there that is like a little uncomfortable. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's sort of, anyway, first of all, I need to point out that I'm European, so I can parallel park. So that's actually something I don't have a rear camera, so I have not yet lost that skill. But yeah, it's sort of correct. You know, kind of, there are certain things that we lose, but that is something that we have always done as a human species, right? So it's essentially kind of, there were always, whenever with every new technology, there were also certain skills that became no longer that important, right? So when I entered high school, you know, calculators, pocket calculators were not allowed, right? So we actually had to calculate everything by hand. So there are certain things that our students today no longer learn, and they are not really lost, or kind of, we don't really think that this is something that they lost, because it's simply no longer really needed. Now you're bringing one thing that obviously is going to be a big challenge for the at the lower levels. Obviously, you know, kind of, you're absolutely right. When I talk to PhD students, they have an understanding on how to use this technology to their advantage. They also know that they cannot simply rely on what the system is telling them. They need to put that into context and then essentially kind of fine tune or kind of ask additional questions and kind of, it's essentially like you work with an assistant.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right that there is probably a kind of a real challenge at the middle school, high school level, or maybe even earlier than that, when the students are starting to develop these skills, to make sure that they don't rely on these things exclusively. You know, kind of that's something we will see in the future. That's unfortunately not something that we have direct impact on.
Yeah.
But you know, kind of, if any high school teachers or middle school teachers are listening here, that's definitely something they need to kind of look into very, very deeply and kind of make sure that everything is done correctly. Because once again, you know, kind of, we don't really have a choice, right? So if our students are exiting college, they are going into the industry. So we need to prepare them from what the industry is demanding. And the industry is kind of jumping on artificial intelligence wholeheartedly. That essentially means we need to prepare them for that. You know, kind of at the lower levels, essentially, there's a lot of preparation that needs to be done in order to make sure that we can essentially can take that and kind of prepare our students for the industry.
Yeah, no, and I agree immensely. Like I think about subjects like mathematics, right? And your point of, we went from abacus to slide rule to calculator to computer and
new math now.
Well, yeah, and then you have the modern maths that are, well, that's a conversation for a different day. But there is a certain subset of mathematics that you would absolutely have to understand to even apply the artificial intelligence. But in your space, we're talking about creativity, right? And you, in that episode I watched on your YouTube channel, which is fabulous, by the way, and I would tell anyone, check it out, go to his YouTube channel and see what he's talking about. But there was the two pirate ships and the cup of coffee.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And you were talking about the fluid dynamics of a sea in a cup of coffee, and that artificial intelligence wasn't trained in fluid dynamics. The information is out there. But it represented it artistically and creatively. It's spot on, right? And the seas were rolling and the boats were moving. And so there's this, now the technology is learning, and it has its own sort of, I don't want to say it's a creativity, but it is in essence a evolution in its own right. Right. So, and that's what we're talking about, that pace of play. How, and to go back to a podcast we did. It was a colleague of yours, and his name is slipped my mind. I should have done the research on it before, but they were doing a joint venture, and it was called the Rascal Program. And their mission was essentially to, the rocket ship had already landed on Mars. They had to figure out the fuel source type and the trajectory it needed to come off Mars to get back to Earth. And that was the project. It was a joint venture, Drexel Temple, and I'm leaving some, St. Joe's maybe?
I think it was Villanova.
Maybe Villanova, but either way. So that to me is the exciting part of artificial intelligence. When you have the mind that can craft it and using the AI to generate that type of stuff, I feel like it pushes forward, you know, the Elon Musk environment of the world to a great extent. But there's obviously, for every pro, there's typically a downside, right? It's like social media. Your stuff on social media is fantastic and educational, and people learn from it. I think ours is as well. But then there's the other side that is, you know, political or polarizing or hate or whatever, right? How far and how rapidly do you think this gets in what period of time? Like I'm trying to quantify it. Right. And I don't think I can. We I want to talk about the Google failures of the last few weeks that have made the news, because that is to me the downside of intelligence like this, where it is manipulated intelligence as opposed to true artificial intelligence. We want to help. Send your questions to info@collegeknowledge.net. These can be about college, finances, careers, and anything else you have questions on.
I think the example that you brought up, the two pirate ships with in the cup of coffee, where the Sora essentially correctly represented the fluid dynamics in that environment, is a very good one, because it also shows exactly where the human is needed, because somebody actually needs to understand that this is the correct way to represent fluid dynamics, right? So the artificial intelligence created that, but I actually need to, as an artist, need to look at that and kind of need to see, does this actually work? Is this correct? Is everything done in exactly the way it's supposed to be done? And for that, I also, as an artist, actually need to have an understanding of how that works as well. It's not only the artificial intelligence that needs to do that. So kind of creativity, it's really a tool that creates things, but it's still the responsibility of the artist and the designer to understand if something that artificial intelligence has created, it has created correctly, or it has created in the optimal way, or kind of in the way that is best for whatever purpose. I personally think that, and I constantly, and a lot of people in that space are constantly redefining their timeline, and it gets quicker and quicker and quicker, right? So what we have seen with Sora in particular over the last couple of weeks is something we did not expect for the next 5 years, and suddenly it's here, right? I'm starting to see certain tools that are really exciting in the sense that they are starting to use artificial intelligence really as a help for creators in order to create things. You know, kind of there's a tool out, or kind of it's currently in beta, that is more a movie editing suite that it takes the creator from the process of defining the personas of the characters that are in your movie, through the design of the storyline, through the design of the essentially the kind of the every little detail of that movie, to the actual kind of creation of that movie. And it is a step process, and the system takes over much of the production, but the creative decisions are still done in collaboration with the user. So it really becomes like an assistant. And I think that are the things that really excite me, and that are the things that we are trying to prepare for. It's starting to get increasingly challenging because of the speed with which these things are developing now. We do expect that, you know, kind of in a year or two, people will be able to use artificial intelligence with tools like that to create full length movies. And that is kind of something, if you would have asked me the same question only like 4 weeks ago, I would have said, no way. Yeah. So kind of it's just something that we need to be very vigilant about. Mm-hmm. So far, I'm not really concerned in the sense that I think, we will always need human creators. We will always need artists. We will always need designers for a variety of different reasons. But the tools that they will use will change substantially mm-hmm. over the next couple of years, substantially.
When I hear that, one of the things that goes through my mind is you have a high school junior, senior, and they're thinking about what they might want to be doing in mm-hmm. life. And I remember I had a conversation with someone a while back. There's someone's a computer science major, and the job that he got when he graduated didn't exist when he was a freshman in college. And I feel like that is something that in this area is 100% going to be true. And with that, how important is it for students that may want to go down this road that they really, it's, I would say, more follow a passion than necessarily a career, because the career might not exist yet, but there might be something that is created that you have already grown a passion to. How important is it to find that and understand that that's what the trajectory may be? There may not be a roadmap that's actually created yet because that pathway doesn't exist. Mm.
Yeah, that's something I think that a lot of kind of prospective students and parents need to think about, and also kind of teachers in high schools, that many of the things that the students might be passionate about when they are considering entering college might not exist like a couple of years down the road. I would recommend to just kind of try to figure out what universities, what colleges are really best suited to prepare for that future, right? Mm-hmm. It's not only us. There are, quite frankly, a lot of colleges out there that do exactly the same thing that we do. But you need to have something that that is really trying some sort of education that is really trying to figure out what is the jobs going to be in 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people kind of don't really realize, but the main, and I said that before, the main job a university has is not to prepare students for the things that they need today. It prepares them for the things that they will need in 10 years.
Yeah.
Right. And for that, that also has been a bit of a challenge over the last couple of years, to be perfectly honest, because our students are coming in with very set kind of ideas of what they want to do. I want to do camera movements in games. That's what I do. I want to do texturing for animation. That's what I want to do. Those are all jobs that are not going to be here like 2 years from now. We need everybody to be aware to open up their mind mm-hmm. and kind of see this as an opportunity. And in my opinion, the first people who really understand what that opportunity is and try to figure out how to position themselves correctly in that space will be extremely successful, because at the moment, I don't see a lot of people kind of really yet being in that mindset, kind of trying to figure out, okay, these tools are coming, right? Mm-hmm. So what do I have to do in order to be on the top of my field in 5 to 10 years? And that is something that everybody needs to think about very carefully, instead of just kind of focusing on one thing. So as you said, kind of having the broad passion. So mm-hmm. right, kind of if my passion is creating games, that is a very valid passion. But kind of if your passion is just kind of texturing certain things, or kind of lighting in certain games, that might be too narrow. So kind of yeah. People need to think about it more from a broader perspective.
Interesting. So I want to reflect back on something you were talking about with the pirate ships in the coffee cup, because your sort of perspective was it's the artist at the moment that then has to say, is this accurate? Is this real before mm-hmm. I produce this or before I put this out in the space? But we're living in a society and a time right now where the filters are off. People believe whatever they're fed, and not to say society is ignorant, because that's not my intention, but like there's people go to one place to get information and they trust that information. And so in the idea of like, how do you govern the you were talking, I related what you were saying about the artist to checks and balances. Like, hey, this is great. Is this real, or is this how it would actually work? And the artist is their names on that. So they have the onus is on them to produce and to manage. But we're in an age of misinformation or opinion as information, as opposed to fact as information, things like that. How do we manage that moving forward with society?
Well, I mean, the first thing I need to kind of point out that it's not only kind of in terms of accuracy, right? So you also, as an artist, you have a certain vision of what the mm-hmm. result is going to be. So mm-hmm. it's also making sure that the artificial intelligence is true to your vision. And that might actually mean that it is not kind of completely real, right? So I think that's important that in the creative process, the artificial intelligence is only taking over the production part of it. Mm-hmm. It's not really kind of the importance is going to lie in the beginning and in the end of a production. The beginning, where I'm trying to figure out what do I want to do mm-hmm. and what do I want to produce, what do I want to create. And that at the end is essentially how do I take whatever these tools have created and turn that into something that is true to my vision. Those are the two things really. Yeah. I think most of the future work is going to lie. Now, in terms of you bring up a very interesting question, because this term I actually kind of taught a class on research methodologies, and I also give a brief introduction into the philosophy of science and the philosophy of knowledge. And one of the questions that we always need to kind of ponder about is what is actually real and what is not real, right? And these new tools are going to kind of challenge society in the sense that it's going to become increasingly complicated for the average person to distinguish between what is real and what is not real. Mm-hmm. But I would argue that this is not necessarily a bad thing, because if you think about it, in a world where everybody, what would you prefer? A world where everybody believes that everything is true, or a world where everybody kind of needs to question if things are true? I would argue that the second is better. If we get to the point that everybody is completely aware that whatever they see might not be real, there will become the need to be a critical thinker again, mm-hmm. Because you need to think critically of what you see. You cannot simply take that. Right now, if I see kind of, a political figure kind of giving a speech, I know that's sort of real, right? I look at it, the video looks accurate. It is what it is. Next year, probably next month, I'm probably sure, yeah, you won't be able to do that anymore. And that essentially means that you need to question everything. Yeah. And if you question everything, I think that's a positive development for our society. I honestly think that.
Well,
I don't necessarily say it's negative, but it's an interesting question, right? It's a very interesting question. So we are entering this postmodern kind of idea of hyperreality, where we are no longer really able to distinguish between what's real and what's mm-hmm. not.
Yeah, and that kind of doubles down or coincides with the point you made about the classroom, of bringing the teacher now to the student closer together once again. And it's a fascinating perspective, because it's a lens I never even looked through. But the idea of, if you question everything, then you are now set on a journey to find the reality of it. And maybe the point is, unless you hear it in person live, you can't trust it. And so it's a very cool perspective on that. I appreciate the insight there, because that one makes me feel good.
Yeah,
I mean, it's sort of also kind of we have started kind of a process by which we are completely revamping our programs. And one of the things what you said is the focus is going to be kind of increasingly on critical thinking. So mm-hmm. kind of the skills in terms of critically kind of approaching certain things, critical thinking is going to be more and more important, and much of our program is going to move towards kind of giving these skills to students, rather than just kind of giving production skills. You know, kind of nobody needs to know anymore how to open a piece of software and what menu buttons to press. And that's not important at all. What's really important is to think critically about all the things that you see and all the things that the tools create for you. And I think that's at least in our feeling, that's sort of where the future goes.
And I hope that that's where we go, because I think the ability to critically think has been lost in the past few years. I mean, we're joking about, like, you won't be able to know what's real or not, but I can tell you, everybody that lines up on a certain political side of the aisle they can see something that was edited in a way to prove a point. And then you look at the other side and it's edited the same video, just what is cut, what is not. And now you have people that 100% believe that. And then you have the people that go, well, let me watch the full clip and I'll draw my own opinion. That is where the minority is right now. So if AI gets us to a point where we start to question everything and get back to actually doing your own research and critically think and not just focus on the headline and take it for what it is, I am 100% for that, because I think that's something that society is lacking right now.
Well, and I think it speaks volumes to you and your department and your school that you're ahead of the game saying, hey, this isn't about the use of the production technology. Mm-hmm. That's going to develop. You're going to be able to use it. It's going to be a user-friendly experience, right? But what now becomes the main focus is the critical thinking pre, during, and post all of this stuff that actually makes a difference. And I think there's something else that is that hit me when you said it was, I feel like as a society, we've gotten relatively lazy, meaning things have gotten easier to do. So we've sort of embraced the ease. All of a sudden, critical thinking eliminates the laziness in decision making, in thought patterns, in purchase patterns, and things like that. And you, like, a perfect example I'll use is Amazon, right? You go on Amazon, it says Prime, it says delivered in 2 days. You don't think, is this the right price? Is this a fair price? Is this the price I would pay if I went to the store? Is this the price if I went and researched online? You just click it because it's going to be there in 2 days. It's a no brainer. And it looks, it bells and whistles on it, right? All of a sudden, you know, you eliminate that laziness because you are forced. You cannot be lazy in that. And so I think there's an incredible outcome on that side as well, where, man, lazy doesn't work anymore. Mm-hmm.
It's sort of there's this interview that Lex Friedman did with Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, almost a year ago, I think. Although kind of things are moving so quickly, I don't even know. But sort of even Sam Altman essentially made the same point. He said that kind of the interesting thing is that it seems that these tools are bringing a nuanced thinking back into society that was sorely missed. So kind of I do agree to that. And that's just a consequence, because once you cannot believe, don't believe, disbelieve everything, right? So kind of, and that essentially requires you to think critically. Mm-hmm. So it kind of takes you out of this mindset to be lazy, as you said, because you cannot be lazy anymore. You actually have to be active in understanding how the world works and how the things are. And I think that's actually a positive consequence. So I tend to look at the positive things rather than.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad that I get the opportunity to speak with you, because it in one fell swoop, my perspective has changed.
Yeah.
Which is another thing that, like, I don't know that many people are willing to change perspectives that fast, but like when you go, what we've done, and just for parents and students listening, what Professor Wagner has done has given me perspective that is grounding, supports a critical decision in my mind, which is, hey, the embrace and the positive and so seeing it for what it will become. And that may not happen overnight, right? We're not talking about everybody's going to get off their butts and not be lazy tomorrow, but over time it's going to force this human sort of resurgence, but it's going to force people to do what historically they've always had to do, which is critically think about things.
Yeah. So essentially there will be a transitional time without question. So what I just said is not going to happen overnight. And there mm-hmm. might even be some issues in the near future in terms of kind of people not really being ready or not mm-hmm. yet being adjusted to the new world. And that's something kind of to be concerned about, quite frankly. But I think eventually, I would expect that in the next 5 to 10 years, our society will kind of adjust to that and become a more critically thinking society again. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, we might have a couple of years where we're back to the, where'd you learn that? Oh, I read it on the internet, right? Oh, chat AI told me, you know, let's double check that, you know, there's going to be a couple of years. That's what it's going to be, you know?
Yeah, it's going to be a fun couple of years. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, or not, right?
Yeah, or not. The cool part is, and if you've never used artificial intelligence, use it. Figure out how to use it. One of the things that I've used it for is marketing content, right? And it is not about you ask a question and it produces the content and it's a done deal. It is a collaborative, iterative process where you refine and you refine and you, and then you find that thing that, and all of a sudden, you know, you're in it for an hour and you get a sentence that is like, it is the sentence that you've been trying to figure out. And in all of this, and you're dissecting and breaking it down. And the way I've used it is I always say the first draft of anything is garbage, right? That's just my traditional nature. And so one of the things I was taught when I was learning critical writing was say it as simply as you possibly can in as few possible words as you can, and you've got what you're looking for. And so I would start with a paragraph, and the paragraph would get cut apart. And eventually I'd get the sentence or two sentences that said everything I said with too many words in the paragraph. And I think that's where AI really can help. And it's the dissection. And I go back to your PhD student and it was like, hey, there's all this stuff I've got to do. How do I even start? Where do I start? And then all of a sudden you go ask the question, you start to dissect it, and you come out with this crafted plan, which again, 180 on the PhD student. I think it's brilliant now from that perspective. So I'm a believer now.
I do have
to and you need to do that in a personalized way. So essentially kind of when you ask ChatGPT, you need to kind of explain sort of where you are right now, right?
Yep.
So that's really kind of, it's not just a search engine. It really kind of tries to figure out where you want to go based on where you are. And then it becomes an iterative process, a design process, really.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of being in a design college is actually perfect for that type of thing. The other thing that, you know, kind of when it comes to the quality of the output, it depends obviously on what your kind of expectations are. But one thing that we found, and that is actually another thing that is actually super interesting, is that we have a lot of international students, and these tools have leveled the playing field completely. So essentially what they can essentially do is they can use these tools in order to correct their language, in order to kind of reformulate things. I have not seen a badly written assignment for the last couple of months. That just doesn't happen anymore, because these tools essentially assist students who need assistance in certain things. And that's also a kind of a very interesting development, quite frankly, that a lot of colleges are going to actually appreciate.
I will say every now and then, because I like using it for the marketing aspect, and I asked for a tagline. And again, I've constantly been working on the same thing. And I did have one in our industry. It said college or planning for college is like riding a bike, except the bike's on fire and you're in hell.
I said, that's a good one. And that popped up right away. I said, I didn't have to prompt that much at all. That one worked. That it's getting my idea. So that was, I had to let you know about that one.
So one question I think our listening audience would love to know, right? So specifically to the creative careers, right? How do parents today support that, knowing that, like, and I don't, anybody that's a great artist with brush and canvas, fantastic, but there is since we're talking direct, so I'll go back to engineering, right? So engineering 100 years ago, you had your big three, right? You had your electrical, you had your mechanical, you had your civil. And then it's gone. It's spawned into, I mean, there's now, I don't know, 50 or so different engineering degrees you can get. The creative arts are spawning their own, the video games. It's all in that space, right? From marketing, branding to all of that as well. So how does a parent support a student, and what should a student be doing to kind of prepare themselves for this type of career path or this type of education?
Well, I mean, there's no question that we're currently seeing a lot of anxiety, that is completely clear, because if you're kind of getting into that type of college path, which takes you a couple of years, and you're entering an industry where you're not quite sure how that's going to look like in a couple of months down the road, it becomes a big question if you make that investment or not. So there's no question about that. My recommendation would be to look for kind of college careers or colleges that provide that level of critical thinking that we've been talking about. It's less important to get the production skills. So there are a couple of colleges out there that focus on more kind of the trade school kind of production skills. I would think that this is really the time where you need to be open to the idea that the most important skill that you can earn is critical thinking and how you interact with other people. Those are really kind of the two things. So any support that helps a student appreciate kind of this idea of thinking about things mm-hmm. and analyzing things and then kind of choosing a college that provides that level of education, I think that would be my recommendation. If you do that, my strong belief is that anybody who goes down that path is not going to have any issues with their career in the future, because there's always going to be need for those people. Mm-hmm. But if you don't develop those critical thinking skills, then you might end up being in trouble once you have to search for your job.
I love that answer, but I have a follow-up to that. What can parents or students do to find out if the school teaches that way? Is it a visit? Is it talking with the professor? What advice can we give to families? Because I love that answer. Like, that is exactly what I would want my kids to go to school for, to learn how to think the right way, not be told what to think. Right. Exactly. So how can parents kind of, is it something that they have to read between the lines? What are some ways that they can find out if that's the type of university for them?
The best way to do that is simply talk to the faculty.
Okay. Right?
Kind of make a visit, kind of if possible. That's always the best way. And I do know that there are many parents out there that actually make entire kind of tours across the United States and kind of talk to all colleges and all faculty. Fortunately, the pandemic brought us video conferencing. So, it's actually fairly easy today to get in touch with faculty and in the individual colleges and just kind of talk to them. And most of them will be open to kind of talk to you. And if they are not open to that, then that's already a bad sign anyway.
Yeah.
Well, So kind of just talk to them, visit them. That's really the best way to find out if that's the path you want to go.
Love it. Thank you.
The culmination of this couldn't be better for a plug for the sponsor of the show, which is the College Planning Network. And I have to say, so I've always said in talking to families that college is really the first critical decision that a adolescent has to make for themselves, right? And you got your parents' support, you got people helping you in all areas, but it's the first time they have to make a critical decision. And if we're speaking about critical decisions, and critical decision making is a piece of the future of every education, College Planning Network has a research tool. And to me, critical decision starts with research. Understand what you're getting into, understand where you're going, know the facts, know all of the stuff involved with it. And so if you go to collegeplanningnet.com and you look at that research tool that they have on the website, you can go in and learn an incredible amount about the schools and start your criteria list, right? What is important to you? Know that, number one, and start cutting schools out that don't have what's important to you, and then take the step to go to the school visit, contact the faculty, talk to people that have gone there to like learn the experience and do your research, take the time. It is an incredible decision that, it's one that affects the rest of your life. It does. If you go and don't get those tools that we talked about, critical decision and the ability to think, right, you're missing out on it. So again, I think parents and students, you got to take the time, take it seriously. And especially with the advent that you're talking about, Professor Wagner, is that stuff's changing quick. Yep. I mean, it is rapid. And so you've got to do your part to make sure that you're not going to be left behind because you're not going to a school that's teaching that stuff.
And if you really ask the right questions, essentially you find out very, very quickly if a faculty member is capable of really kind of being flexible enough to adjust to what the future brings, right? So it's something I think, in my experience, most parents that I've talked to are really capable of understanding that and kind of asking the right questions. But it is important that you do that. If you don't do that, essentially, then it becomes a little bit a kind of a game of chance. Mm-hmm. You need to really kind of do your research, as you said. I think that's really critical.
Awesome. Joe, any other questions here?
No, I loved it today. This was fantastic. A lot of golden nugget takeaways, like we like to call them. Just a lot of great information. But again, I've always been extremely valued critical thinking, and to hear that how important you speak about it and how important it is going to be, like it's going to go back to being a necessity in the future. That was very interesting to hear. And I was kind of glad to hear that part of our conversation today. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah. The perspective was awesome. So everyone listening, I hope you learned something today. If you like the show, please like, subscribe, and share. And please visit Professor Michael Wagner's YouTube channel and hear the stuff he's talking about in the creative space, because it's awesome and it's forward thinking, right? And I think mm-hmm. that's the key. That if I summarize today, you have to be forward thinking now, right? Because and especially if you're going into the creative spaces and the design and things like that. So that's college knowledge for today. Professor Wagner, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. It was a great pleasure for me being here. That was fun.
Awesome. Thank you guys for being a part of College Knowledge. Just a reminder, if you're sending your student to school, visit elitecollegiateplanning.com for free resources and to book a free consultation. Thanks for listening to the College Knowledge Podcast with your hosts, Dave Kozak and Joe Kearns. We hope you enjoyed this week's exploration of higher education, sponsored by the College Planning Network and Paradigm Financial Group. That's all for this episode. See you next time.